right to say stories about zombies tend to evoke one of two emotions, horror or humour, or maybe both. But American author Carrie Ryan has defied logic by adding love to that equation. Her debut novel, The Forest of Hands and Teeth, takes us to a post-apocalyptic landscape where love and the human spirit prevail, despite the fact that zombies roam the earth. Set in a fenced-off village that battles against an outside world populated by the undead, the novel follows Mary, who's on the edge of marriage, but she begins to question her role in a religiously conservative society. Her decisions propel her into the world of the zombie forest, where she's forced to choose between two suitors. Carrie Ryan's no stranger to love stories. She wrote a couple of romance novels that never saw the light of day, but her heart was captured by a different genre after her boyfriend, one J.P. Davis, took her on a date to see George Romero's classic zombie flick, Dawn of the Dead. The book shows Erica Vowles takes up the story from there.
Dawn of the Dead is here.
We must not be lulled by the concept that these are our family members or our friends. They are not. They will not respond to such emotions.
It gets up and kills. The people it kills get up and kill. This situation must be controlled before it's too late.
That first movie definitely made an impression, and J.P. Davis is my fiancé now, and I wish I could tell you how he talked me into going to that movie, because I had not gone to see a scary movie since I saw Poltergeist when I was like 4 years old. And just leaving that theater, you know, first of all, spending the entire movie terrified, looking at my watch, wanting it to end, and then leaving and wondering how I would survive, what I would do, it just fascinated me. And J.P. bought me the zombie survival guide kind of as a joke, but it was just such a fascinating thought experiment. So I basically would read any book I could get my hands on or any movie that dealt with apocalypse, dealt with zombies. But the rule was that if JP had already seen it, he had to tell me of the scary parts and he had to warn me before anything jumped out of closets.
They eat their victims.
Imagine, if you will, that something has gone terribly wrong. Now, accept the fact that there's no escaping the horrible consequences.
You know, when one thinks about zombies, you can't help but conjure up images from movies. Well, for me, it's movies like 28 Days Later, the British apocalyptic zombie film, which is now 28 weeks later, and there's going to be a 28 months later.
Yay!
And or even Shaun of the Dead, which is, you know, the kind of rip-off comedy take on zombies in England. It's a genre that's as much feared as it is made fun of. So how did you deal with those two aspects of the baggage that comes with the genre?
I think one of the really great things about zombies is that there really is no totally set canon. In fact, I just saw that George Romero is writing a book, and so I'm very curious to see how that deals with the canon of zombies. But I feel like it's sort of a new monster, so you don't have it the baggage that you might have with a vampire. But you mentioned Shaun of the Dead, which was a comedy, but I also feel like they really nailed the deep emotional parts too. I mean, they really dig into your emotions when you're watching that. But I really do think in the end there's not a so much baggage that you can't forge your own way. But I definitely feel like there are times when people have certain expectations. They want a fast zombie. They want a slow zombie. Recently, I've been reading a lot of books with sentient zombies, and to me, that's also something new.
So explain for us sentient zombies.
Sentient zombies are the ones who can think and talk. U.S. author Mark Henry has a series out. His most recent was Road Trip of the Damned, and his zombies can think. They can talk. In fact, his main character is a zombie, whereas in The Forest of Hands and Teeth, there is no talking. They have no thoughts. They're very much what I consider the old school Night of the Living Dead Romero zombies.
The Forest of Hands and Teeth, to me, almost tells like a fable story setting in that you've got a village that's surrounded by a fence that keeps out the Forest of Hands and Teeth, which is occupied by zombies that, Kerry, you call the unconsecrated in the book. And so you've kind of got this village setting. It's a closed-off world, and The novel's heroine, Mary, is someone who has an overwhelming urge to escape this kind of cloistered atmosphere and find out what is beyond the forest of hands and teeth. And through her, you depict a kind of fear that's tinged with courage. I find her very human.
Thanks. I'm glad. That's really what I wanted to go for. For me, Mary was a character who has been told her entire life not to question her world, not to question her desires or her wants. And she's been told that really all that matters in this world is for her to survive and to create the next generation. She's been told they're the last people left on Earth. And she bucks that. She says that she wants to have dreams and she wants hopes and desires. And she doesn't necessarily want to be told how to live her life. And I feel like that's sort of what the zombies are in that book too. The zombies in the forest of hands and teeth are, they're representations of nothing but existence. All they do is exist and hunger. They have no dreams and no hopes. They have no desires. And so I wanted Mary to sort of look at them and say, what's the difference between the two of us? What makes me different?
Because Mary's world is one that is tinged by both love and desire as well as loss, right at the beginning of when we meet her in the novel, when we find out what happens when someone is bitten by the unconsecrated. And I'd like for you to read for us a section at the beginning when Mary's mother has actually been infected, we think, by Mary's father, who's already a zombie. And Mary's mother has decided that rather than be killed, she's going to leave the village and she's going to join the undead.
My mother has chosen to join the unconsecrated, and I am quite sure that my brother will blame me for her choice. He will ask me why I allowed her to make this decision for herself, why I did not stand in for her and tell the guardians to kill her. I am not sure what I will tell him. It is a complicated process, giving a living human over to the forest of hands and teeth. The guardians found out years ago that the transfer cannot be done too early, because a live human cast into the forest will be nothing but food for the unconsecrated, who will tear at their flesh and eat until there is nothing left. But at the same time, it's too dangerous to have the infected in the village. The guardians will not run the risk of having someone return amongst the living, and there is no certainty about when the infected will die and return. Everything depends on the severity of the bite. With a small, simple bite, it may take days for the infection to spread and kill, while a gruesome attack can cause someone to return within heartbeats. And so the guardians have devised a complicated system of gates and pulleys to keep the infected in a sort of purgatory between the living and the unconsecrated. This is where my mother is now, and I sit nearby, listening to her pop her jaw and clack her teeth like a cat lusting after a bird as the infection roars through her body. She is too sick to talk now, too ravaged to even understand. In the moment between my mother's death and her return, I stop believing in God. The guardian quickly grabs the end of the rope tied to my mother's left ankle as I scoot away from the fence. It is anchored over a system of pulleys lashed to branches high above, and he heaves against it, the other end of the rope dragging my mother to the edge of her pen. The guardian pulls a lever, and a gate rises and her lifeless body slides into the forest of hands and teeth. He cuts the rope and reverses the lever, and the gates grind shut. For a heartbeat, the world is silent around us, the sound of our own breathing muffled by the mist. His duty complete, my mother's body given fully over to the unconsecrated, the guardian places a hand on my shoulder. Whether it is to comfort me or hold me back does not matter. I imagine that I can feel his pulse through his fingertips. We are both so alive in that moment, surrounded by so much death. I can't decide if I want to watch my mother return, if I can bear to see it. But I can't help but wonder what this moment is like. Is there a spark or an instant where she will remember her old life from before? Suddenly, questions scream through me. I wonder if I should have dressed her in something different, if I should have put her in warmer clothes or better shoes, if I should have pinned a note to the inside of her dress telling her that I love her. I wonder how long it will take for her to find my father, and if she will recognize him. An image of the two of them holding hands at the fence line flits across my mind. She is on her feet before I even know what's happening. She stares at me, and for a moment all I can think is, Mother. And then she opens her mouth, and my world shatters with her screams that fall off into moans as her vocal cords give way. I cannot bear it, and I start to move toward her, struggling under the weight of the guardian's hand. But then I hear my name being called out in a warning.
We're speaking with Cari Ryan about her novel, The Forest of Hands and Teeth. And in the book, one of the other characters, it seems to me, that's very important is Gabrielle, a woman in red, who arrives at the village and in so doing brings a hint of the outside world. But eventually she succumbs and becomes a zombie and is the catalyst for immense change at the village. Cari, can you tell me how you see the bond between Mary and Gabriel working in your novel?
That's a really interesting question because the bond between Mary and Gabriel wasn't something I had planned from the beginning. I just wanted someone from the outside to sort of shake things up. But the more time that they sort of saw each other and they barely talk, I think the more that Mary realized that Gabriel is who she wants to be. Someone who strikes out on her own, someone who looks after her dreams and goes through the forest to try and find something other than what she has at that moment. And I also think that there's a moment in which, you know, Mary has held Gabrielle to be this incredible character who's everything she wants to be. And then Mary realizes that Gabrielle was sort of forced into the situation the same way that Mary was. She really sort of has to come to terms with where you find your inspiration. Do you find them from somebody outside of yourself, or is that a catalyst to find it from yourself?
Mary is someone who really struggles to know herself and to know her destiny in a village that's fenced off from the world. And in one scene, I was really struck by this scene. She writes letters to all the people she wished she'd said things to, and then attaches these letters to arrows and literally embeds her story into the skulls of the unconsecrated milling around a house she's seeking refuge in, killing off, you know, dozens of zombies. What were you saying here?
I really wanted her to just get everything off of her chest when she writes these letters and shoots them off into the, sort of into the ground, and she ends up hitting the zombies in the heads. But I also, I guess I really also liked the idea of she always struggles with who we are and who remembers us. For me, this idea of struggling with who remembers us comes from the fact that my grandmother used to tell me amazing stories, and I have a terrible memory, and I'm starting to forget them. And so Mary wonders who's going to remember her. And so she sort of puts her story in these other people's heads because, A, they don't have their own stories that she knows, and, B, she wants her stories to continue. But it was kind of a fun scene to write.
It's also a love story in a world where love is a secondary concern. Survival of oneself and one's race is more important. And I almost can't believe that I did get drawn into a love story that is literally set against the moans of the undead. How did you do that?
I mean, you know, I started with romance writing. I wanted to write a love story. I also love to read love stories. And, you know, regardless of what happens to the world, I'd like to believe there will always be love. It's also funny because I definitely have some readers, including my own mom, who sort of thought, I don't want to read a zombie book. And I had to say, you know, Mom, it's not really a zombie book. It's a book that happens to have zombies in it.
Look, I have to say that the only reason I read this book is I got recommended by someone whom I respect and trust, and so I wasn't expecting to read a zombie book.
No, I think a lot of people feel that way, actually, which I love because, you know, I was someone who did not like zombies at all until I, you know, somehow got talked into going to see Dawn of the Dead. So I really love that people who would automatically reject a zombie book are sort of drawn into mine, and I'm hoping that it makes them want to read some more, or it makes them sort of expand what they read even more.
They must be destroyed on sight.
When there is no more room in hell, dead will walk the earth.
We are down to the line, folks. We are down to the line.
Kerry, I have to say, on a personal level, the reality you created was very compelling for me. And when I was reading your novel one night, I actually did run around my apartment and shut all the windows because I was getting scared. And I found myself of late gazing at sturdy knee-high boots thinking, well, they'd be good in the event of a zombie uprising. They'll guard my feet and legs against scratches, cuts and bites. And I'm just wondering, do you ever get freaked out by your own writing or the writing of others?
I get freaked out all the time. In fact, I read the book Solace by Christopher Golden recently, which is a right as the zombie apocalypse happens novel. And I was so freaked out by the end. I was staying at my mom's house, and her house so would not survive a zombie apocalypse, that I turned around and picked up a romance novel. I needed something much lighter and much more fun after finishing it. But I definitely spend a lot of time thinking about various places. It's a really, for me, fun thought experiment. You know, what would you do? How would you survive? It was a lot more fun when I lived on the top floor in an apartment building and was a little bit better protected than I am now. Now it's more of a, would we be able to get out fast enough? And the answer is pretty much no.
Is it for you just a fun intellectual exercise, or does part of you ever think, given, you know, the problems with the environment or economic meltdown, does part of you ever kind of think that some kind of apocalypse of our society isn't that out of the realms of possibility, and writing about it and talking about it is a way of, I don't know, preparing yourself for it?
I do think for me it's often a lot of fun. I like to hope that an apocalypse wouldn't happen, even though I do feel like more and more you sort of get that little twinge thinking, well, something could happen. But I also remember my fiance and I were driving home a couple of months ago, and there was sort of a man walking down the middle of the road, and he was shambling. There is no other word than he was shambling. And JP kind of looked at me, and I kind of looked at him, and I thought, you know, we are those morons in books who say this could never happen. But he looked like a zombie. And it's those little moments when you think, wow, could something really happen? And then you want to run and learn how to plant gardens really quickly so that you could survive.
American novelist Kerry Ryan there, speaking about the world of zombies and her novel, The Forest of Hands and Teeth. With the book show's Erica Vowles, I wonder why she's been wearing knee-length boots to the office lately, and now it's all clear. The book is published by Orion Books, and the sequel, The Dead Tossed Waves, is due to be published in 2010. You're listening to Scary ABC Radio National with me, Ramona Koval. Not a zombie, probably.